Now we are recording. Hello and welcome to another fantastical episode of Too Scared to Sleep.
That sounds way too positive for our subject matter.
Nah, don't worry about it. You gotta have some positivity.
Hi and welcome to another fine episode of Too Scared to Sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Get your radio voice on.
In a radio voice. For only three installments of $19.99.
Hello, caller number two.
Yeah, caller number two, what's your, anyway, I watched Godzilla King of the Monsters, and I am never disappointed in that movie.
No, it's fucking awesome, man. It's everything that I want from a Godzilla movie, just big-ass monsters.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah, because we did that 2 days ago when we came and recorded.
Oh, shit, that was only 2 days ago?
Yeah.
This has been the longest week of my life, I don't know why.
Yeah, no kidding.
You were telling me that you like the movie, but you want Godzilla vs. Kong to be more action and less human drama?
Yeah, the action parts of Godzilla versus King Kong Godzilla King of the Monsters are really cool. I really enjoyed the action, love seeing the big spooky monsters, but like, I could have done with about half of the human element that was there and then just replace that with more cool big monster fights. I'm going to be completely honest with you. The Godzilla movies are the few movies where I don't give a shit about the plot or the writing. All I care about is the big spooky monsters. So, it was fun though. I liked it a lot. And as I was telling Jake, I don't think that Godzilla vs. Kong is as impressive now that King of the Monsters showed all those other kaiju and shit that rose like
right,
out of the ground.
Right, because the titans that you see that are only really pressed upon a little bit are more impressive than Kong is, as far as size and superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Kong is going to be okay because here we go with movies again.
This isn't even the right podcast for this.
We're on the wrong podcast right now.
Fuck. It's fine.
Kong brings acrobatic abilities.
Yeah.
You never see Godzilla really throwing anything, but Kong throws shit all the time. He's probably going to throw his poop at Godzilla. The reason that there's such a human element goes back to, here we go with movies again. There's two reasons why there's such a human element. There was always a human element in the Toho Godzilla movies.
Yeah.
But also, the first Godzilla movie that came out with Aaron Taylor Johnson and Bryan Cranston and Elizabeth Olsen, the first Godzilla movie that came out with those actors was written partially and directed by Gareth Edwards.
Yeah.
And he added in the human element in order to be able to tell a better, more well-rounded story. And I thought he did a really good job. But he was not involved in the second movie, Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Yeah, which you can actually tell. Okay, so the first Godzilla, I think, was cool because the human element was, you know, pretty interesting. But it didn't focus enough on Godzilla, which was kind of a bummer for me. But Godzilla King of the Monsters started focusing more on Godzilla and the actual big monsters fighting, which is everything that I wanted, which I love. I think that's, if it were up to me, I would just make a whole movie of Godzilla beating the shit out of other big critters. But I know they're not going to do that.
We could do that stop motion animation. I'm sure that I've got a dinosaur toy around here somewhere. Not the same, right?
Fuck you. It's not the same. You know it's not.
Excuse me. Sorry. Well, then get yourself a Mac and render Godzilla. I don't know how to do that.
You think I do? I took one video game design class.
Did you? Know. Well, that's one more than I did. Anything else going on? We did just see each other 2 days ago.
We did.
Juggling two podcasts. It's a lot of work. I had to buy a dry erase calendar so that we can keep track of all the shit that we're doing.
Yeah, which is cool. I think it's going to be really helpful.
Only now that I got it, two things. I put a studio in my spare room and bought myself a computer desk. And I also got a dry erase calendar and put it on the wall. And they've been in the room for 2 weeks total combined. And I need a larger desk and a larger calendar.
Yeah.
This is how these things work. But whatever.
Well, can't win them all.
You can't. Just start off small. It's all right.
Yeah. But you get an idea of where you want things to go and the setup that you want.
Exactly.
And it's coming together pretty nicely.
What else is going on? Anything else going on? We don't really have anything to talk about.
I mean, I was working today.
This is our paranormal podcast. We're supposed to talk about paranormal stuff.
I know. Nothing spooky happened to me today. I just went to work and I had a migraine all day.
Oh, that sucks.
And then I left and...
Do you need some sage? I've got some sage.
You can
sage you really
sage.
Quick right now.
Oh, actually, no. I do have a thing to talk about. The thing that happened to me 2 days ago when I was here recording with
Fuck
Jake.
Fuck it up, son.
Yes, it's very interesting. So me and my roommates got, which we did not know at first, but we ended up confirming, one of those like mystery box puzzle things where you open it up and there's a whole bunch of like clues and shit in it. At first we were worried because somebody just knocked on our door and then, you know, my roommate opened the door and there was just a big box with a torn, it was like a burnt piece of cloth with his initials and my initials painted on there with red paint, and then a whole bunch of like weird journals and some creepy ass pendant and shit. We thought we'd been cursed.
I told you, I was like, get the box, get it out of your house, burn it by the dumpster, don't bring it inside.
Yeah, but it was already inside because my roommates are my roommates.
That's right, because they don't believe in it like we do.
No, not at all. But anyway, we found out that it was actually one of those like narrative mystery boxes, and I think it's really, really cool. So we've been going through that, and the first night that we got it, I actually stayed up that whole night and I read this journal that came with it. So there was like a missing poster of a kid, some like newspaper clippings, this weird pendant thing, and then this burnt journal. So I went through and I read that whole journal and I took a whole bunch of notes on it, and I wrote down all these creepy ass symbols that were inside of it, and we're starting to get the puzzle together. You know, the narrative is starting to make a little bit more sense, and it's really, really cool. I don't know anything about this other than I think the box that it came in is like Inco Nickel or something like that.
I don't know what that is. I'd have to look at it.
Yeah.
What I thought it was really funny is that you left my house and it was about 10 o'clock, and then about 10:45, you send me a snap.
Oh, yeah.
And it's you. You've changed clothes into a button-down shirt and a tie, and you're like, I'm a grizzled cop.
I did.
A week from retirement. And I've just got this one last case. And what that did to us was, for the next hour, we were training one-liners from Seven.
Oh,
and every other hard-boiled detective movie book reference that we could think of. Just
anything that we could throw at each other, we did it. But I did. I went home, and once we figured out it was this narrative thing that we had to do, I ended up, like, I went into my room, and I changed into a button-down shirt, and I put a tie on, and I made the tie all messy and pulled it down some. And then I just went for it. I went into it, and it was fun. It was a fun night. I stayed up till like 4 in the morning, and I just read through this entire creepy journal, took all these notes on it. And one thing I will say about this thing is it was really surprisingly well written. Like, it got under my skin a little bit. It was fucking creepy, because there's a paranormal element to it too. It's not just like a true crime type thriller.
This sounds so cool. I'm so excited.
It's so fucking cool, man. But yes, the detective thing I thought was really funny.
And that really, I mean, it just triggered something in us. We were just like, oh my God, this is all every David Fincher line that we could think of.
This weird primordial, like, desire.
I can't put my thumb on it, but it just reminds me of the Castro case from 1985. I just don't know why they're so similar. There's so many similarities. And what else? I was like, my new partner, he's only been on the force for 2 months, and he still hasn't lost the light in his eyes. Home already to his wife and his children, but I don't have a wife or a child. All I have is the hunt.
It's just so good.
Stupid.
Oh man, we are so funny to each other,
and to only each other. No one else. It. Everyone else would be like, "What the fuck is wrong with you guys?" But we laugh about it.
No, yeah, because I sent a couple Snapchats to people and tried to explain what was going on, and everybody was like, "What the fuck are you doing, dude?" You were the only one that was like, "Fuck yeah!"
Oh yeah, I got into it. I was like, "Wait, what? What are we doing? Oh my God, this is so much fun!" Okay,
hell yeah! But anyway, that's the only other thing that's been exciting, other than my roommates have started making homemade lemonade, which what? Is I don't know. They just started making their own lemonade, but it's actually really good.
This sounds strange.
No, they just squeeze lemons and then make sugar water, and they make really good lemonade. Shout out to Grace and Caitlin.
I thought it was maybe that was like code for something cool, like moonshine or something.
Yeah, me and my roommates have set up our own meth lab in the apartment.
Okay, so today I'm going to talk about the secret underground base in Dulce, New Mexico. Now, Dulce, New Mexico is on the far northwestern side of the state of New Mexico, up near the Colorado border.
I've heard it mentioned, but I don't know a single fucking thing about this.
Right. The name is actually Dulce in Spanish, which means sweet, but they say Dulce there. I've heard people say it both ways. It's a small southwestern town, very, very tiny, but according to most of the bizarre rumors, this little town is just the cap of a gargantuan underground secret military base where they do all sorts of experiments and they have all of this advanced alien technology. According to conspiracy theorists and ufologists, the Dulce subterranean base is a 7-story compound that houses human-animal hybrids, human-alien hybrids, and extremely advanced technologies. They even say that it's been the site of human versus alien wars.
I am really into that.
Right?
That is very exciting to me.
So the first claims of the base's existence date all the way back to the 1930s. The rumors of an alien intervention in the area began to gain traction in the 70s when a former New Mexico State Police trooper named Gabe Valdez documented unexplained cattle mutilations in the area. According to the Santa Fe, New Mexican newspaper, in a radio interview, Valdez said, "The evidence that was left there, you know, predators don't leave gas masks, glow sticks, radar chaff." So these cattle mutilations are always tried to explain them away as, oh, it's just coyotes or something like that. But there's more to it. He makes even more wild claims in other interviews, including sightings of black, silent, sophisticated spacecraft and the discovery of a fetus inside a dead calf, but not a dead calf fetus.
It looked like a human,
right? It looked like a human, a monkey, and a frog, like a combination of them.
That's certainly something. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Valdez told UFO hunters it didn't have any bones in its head and it was full of water. So the idea is, of course, that they're using cows or cattle to incubate alien babies, like Axitol tanks from the Dune books.
Oh my God.
Should I nerd out and talk to you about Axitol tanks?
Let's not get into that one.
Okay. A former police officer in Dulce says that he's seen UFO in the area that light up the whole valley and just disappear into the rocks. Different times and different people in Dulce have also seen UFO sightings at the time. But it really gained traction when this particular man named Philip Schneider started to tell his story. Now, Philip Schneider used to be an explosive engineer employed by the United States government, and he became the leading whistleblower when it came to the Dulce base. He introduced the idea that Dulce was a site of a brutal human-alien war back in 1979. He tells the story that he had super top-secret high-level security clearance.
Mm-hmm. Of course he did.
Right. So he witnessed firsthand and was involved in this human-alien war. He claims that stealth technology, medical and metallurgy technology, communications and microprocessors were all derived or reverse engineered from alien tech, which is something that we always hear about when it comes to UFOs. For instance, he was talking about how it would take the Army Corps of Engineers, decades in order to hollow out any kind of subterranean base, but that he's seen alien technology do it in a matter of minutes, that they use these lasers to vaporize the rock and make tunnels, and the heat that's created by these lasers basically superheats the area and turns the rock that's left after they've tunneled through into like super strong tunnel reinforcement, and that there's nothing that we have available technology right now that would ever be able to mirror the kind of work that they're able to do with this alien technology. So in 1979, Schneider was a geologist employed by the United States government, and they were trying to dig down and create a subterranean base. So 4 holes were drilled into the desert, and they were linked together with tunnels, and his job was to go down into one of these tunnels and check for rock samples. So he's on some sort of like little elevator, and he's supposed to go down. And during the process of them tunneling down, the workers accidentally opened up a large artificial cavern system that was a secret base for the tall grays. And that the grays there were 7 feet tall, and the cavern smelled horrible, and they had been there for decades. There was this okay, so get this idea that there's an underground base there that the United States government didn't know about that is full of Zeta Reticuli aliens.
That would be horrifying to walk into.
So he goes down in this gurney, and one of the Greys tries to attack him, and he reaches for his sidearm and he shoots at the Grey, but he's also shot with a plasma beam to his chest. And he talks about how one of these Black Beret special ops soldiers ended up saving his life by putting him back on the gurney and sending him up, and the guy died. So Green Berets and Black Berets, as well as scientific personnel, were involved in a standoff that eventually led to a firefight. And that in the panic and then the resulting firefight, 67 workers and military personnel were killed.
Jesus.
And that Snyder was one of the only three people that survived. Mm. He claims that the scars on his chest, because he had some really heavy scarring and some physical disabilities after this thing, that they were all part of this. They were all part of this thing of being hit with this plasma weapon. So he had scars on his chest. He was missing a couple of fingers. And later on, he suffered from cancer. Because of the fight, like I said, he had chronic lower back pain. He ended up getting multiple sclerosis. He had osteoporosis. He said that his arms would swell because of shrapnel wounds. He had a plate in his head with a metal fragment covering his brain and fingers missing from his left hand. There was a scar that ran down from the top of his throat down to his belly button, and another scar that ran from under his ribs from one side to the next.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm. So there's even more claims from Philip Snyder. He says that his father was involved in the Philadelphia experiment, that his father died in 1993, but that he discovered original letters in his father's basement proved that would substantiate all of these claims. He says that his father autopsied bodies of crew members that died and found alien implants in their arms, legs, behind their eyes, and deep inside their brains. These implants were alien in nature, and that they had small transistors in them.
Small transistors in them?
Transistors, or some sort of some sort of communication device was stuck in their brains.
That's weird.
Right? There's another person that's an integral part of the Dolce base conspiracy theory, and his name is Paul Benowitz. He's got a PhD in physics, and he became convinced that the cattle mutilations around the area were a result of extraterrestrial intervention. He then allegedly began picking up intercepted electronic signals near Dolce, and it's like I said, it's in the middle of fucking nowhere, and so there wouldn't be any of these electrical signals. He theorized that these signals were coming from underground and going towards a high target in the sky. Okay, I've got a good story about the cattle mutilations. All right, so let me finish this. Let me talk to you about the cattle mutilations. There's a Gomez family ranch out there, and Edmund Gomez was a young man in his 20s in the 70s. And he lived on the Gomez family ranch, and they began to find cattle that were dead and mutilated along their ranch. And the problem that they had was that Edwin and his father were leasing the ranch from his grandfather. Mm-hmm. And so they were working the cattle, but any cattle that ended up dead, they would end up having to pay back.
Oh, shit. So they started finding all these mutilated cattle. So
they're finding all these mutilated cattle, and they're losing their money from it. According to copies of police reports, found and declassified, as well as FBI files, the family found an 11-month-old bull that had been mutilated. And here's the report. Here's what the report says. Investigation showed that this 11-month-old bull was dropped by some type of aircraft north of Mr. Gomez's ranch house. The rectum and sex organs had been removed with a sharp and precise instrument. The liver and heart of the bull were subsequently removed by the reporting officer. The heart was sent to Los Alamos Medical Laboratory, and the liver was taken to three different labs for examination. The liver was checked against healthy livers, and the comparison showed a difference in chemicals in the mutilated bull's liver. According to the report, the mutilated bull's liver contained no copper and four times the amount of phosphorus, zinc, and potassium as a healthy liver. No explanation for this condition is available at the present time. Blood, which came from the nose, was also examined by the lab, and it was found to be light pink in color. A probable explanation for the pinkish blood is a control type of radiation used to kill the animal, according to radiation experts. It is believed that this type of radiation is not harmful to humans, although approximately 7 people who visited the mutilation site complained of nausea and headaches.
So they killed the cows with this weird kind of radiation.
Like a control radiation.
A controlled radiation. And that, so they said that's what killed them and caused that pink blood. Mm-hmm. And people were complaining about nausea and shit while they were there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, after the Gomez family began collecting evidence about the strange occurrences, Edmonds said people began breaking into their home to steal the evidence.
Holy shit.
Edmonds' mother received menacing phone calls with a voice on the other end threatening harm to her children.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. So it ramps up quick.
Yeah, that went from, I was going to say 0 to 100 real quick, but I feel like it started out at a 50.
It definitely started out at 50 miles per hour, and it just got even worse. The family began to fear for their safety, and Edmund started following his younger brother's school bus after it picked him up, just in case anything happened along the way. Edmund says, "We weren't used to that. We grew up on the ranch. Nobody ever locked their doors, and there was very little crime in the area. And then after a while, we were getting the threatening phone calls, and we're getting the break-ins. You're always looking over your back. You're always uneasy. You never know what to expect. When you go out to the ranch by yourself to fix the fence or to check on the cattle or whatever, you didn't know what you were going to find out there. It was very scary and uneasy." The Gomez family were not the only ranchers to experience these bizarre mutilations at the time. Reports from the declassified FBI files state that across the Midwest and western part of the country, including Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, Oklahoma, and Minnesota, other ranchers were finding their cattle horribly maimed. These reports can be found in the FBI's Digital Freedom of Information Act library, and there's about 6,700 documents that document this kind of cattle mutilation across the West.
Holy shit. And that's just in the West that there's the mm-hmm. over 6,500?
That's right.
Oh my God, that is so many.
In 1975, Colorado Senator Floyd K. Haskell asked the FBI to investigate, and the memorandum that they sent says, "Senator Haskell indicated his concern for a situation occurring in the western states where cattle had been discovered mutilated. The bizarre mutilations include loss of ears, eyes, sex organs, and blood drained from the carcasses with no traces of blood left on the ground and no footprints."
I do not like that, Sam, I am.
That's right. The director of the FBI at the time respondent saying, "I regret to inform you that these actions do not constitute a violation of federal law coming within the FBI's investigative jurisdiction." So it wasn't important enough for them to investigate any further.
Yeah, I mean, it's just cows. Fuck the cows. They're not people.
In another memo, the Bureau says that they've referenced this article. They also talk about the theories of these mutilations. This is furnished to the Bureau in view of numerous references in this article to federal investigative agencies and also theories that these mutilations of cattle are only a forerunner of later mutilations of human beings.
Holy shit. So, like, they ended up finding humans that were mutilated?
I don't think they ever found humans that were mutilated. There's a theory to what the cattle mutilations are about. In 1967, the Atomic Energy Commission detonated a nuclear device near Dulce. The name of the project was Project Gas Buggy, which was meant to ease the flow of natural gas in the Dulce area and the northwestern area of Dulce.
I feel like you're really gliding over the fact that they called it Gas Bunny.
Gas Bunny.
Okay, let's just set off a nuclear warhead, but give it a cutesy little name.
Cutesy little name so that no one gets it. Like Project Pikachu. You're like, oh, that sounds nice.
Is that a thing?
It's a detonation. No, there's never been a Project Pikachu.
Damn it, I got so excited.
We'll have to find a way to make Project Pikachu happen.
Well, I don't want to commit a war crime, or at least talk about it on this podcast.
Exactly. Let's not talk about it. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit more about that. There's a theory that the governmental project may have created some kind of disaster in the sense that a radiation leakage started happening in the late 1970s, and that's coincidentally when the cattle mutilation started. Not only cows, but sheep and other animals were mutilated in that time. So in 2013, a man by the name of Greg Valdez published his father's investigations into the cattle mutilations in Dulce and laid out a theory that the government was monitoring the radiation effects on special local cattle and was trying to do research on the tissue of the cows in the area. And he thinks that what they were doing is they were picking up cattle, take them somewhere else, running these experiments and then dropping them back off in these secret government, either reverse engineered UFOs or stealth helicopters that no one ever heard or anybody ever saw.
That's so weird. But yeah, I mean, you talked about with that first cow, they said it had been dropped from some sort of aircraft, right?
Yeah, exactly. It showed like fall damage and that sort of thing.
Jesus, that's so weird. And like, so it's, I would think it would have to be something like a reverse engineered UFO or something, because we don't like, as far as we know, or as far as the general public knows, we don't have totally silent vehicles.
No, not yet.
Especially not aircrafts.
No, they have to make some sort of noise.
Yeah.
I think it was Bob Lazar. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Bob Lazar who was talking about he once drew what the UFO looked like and what kind of propulsion systems that he saw when he was working and how they ran on this silent technology that showed no, it didn't give off any kind of heat. It didn't give off any kind of sound. It could move silently and it could move, you know, it could go from just hovering in the air to moving at, you know, higher than Mach 1 and then just stop in midair and change directions and move just in no way that any kind of technology that we have moves at this time.
Holy shit, that's so weird. Like, that would be so cool.
It would be cool, but why are they hiding it from us?
I don't know. Why does the government hide anything that they hide?
To make money.
Yeah.
Back to the Gomez family. Eventually, they had to sell the ranch, which had been in their family for 100 years. Like I said, Gomez and his father were leasing the ranch from the grandfather. He says we would run the cows for him, but we were responsible for any debts. So if we had 100 head of cattle and 10 of them died by cattle mutilation, then we would have to recoup that loss, or we would have to take that loss on the nose. And so it became an insurmountable loss of money, and they couldn't keep up with it. And so they ended up having to sell the ranch.
Yeah, I don't know how much a cow costs. You know, I can't just run down to my local Walmart, but I assume they're probably fairly pricey.
They're pretty expensive, I would think. Just to keep alive, you know?
Yeah. Can you imagine how much work it must be to not only handle a dead cow, but a mutilated dead cow?
Right. To lift it up and take it somewhere else.
Oh, my God.
I just go back to the Dolce base, and they're talking about how they saw human and alien hybrids, human and animal hybrids in the Dolce base.
Mm-hmm.
They saw human beings working alongside certain members of the alien community.
And that then, is so weird. Like, wow, just like humans and aliens working side by side, just kind of chilling.
Side by side, like in a Coke commercial.
Wow. I was going to say, how do you stop people from telling anybody about that? But then I realized that, like, for most people, if you were like, yeah, man, my job is I work next to aliens, they would just assume, oh, okay, he does drugs.
Mm-hmm. No one would believe you.
No one would believe you.
I mean, who would you tell that you wouldn't be locked up? I mean, would you go home and tell your family what you've done? Absolutely not.
No. Well, because, I mean, then the government would probably just kill your family, you know,
they hold it over them. And I'm sure if you give a person enough money to do something like this and you say, well, you can't ever tell anybody about it or else you're going to lose all that money. Plus, we're going to put you in jail.
Jail is a powerful motivator, but so is money.
Yeah.
And so is looking at aliens.
Looking at aliens. Yeah. And then there's this whole inherent, I have knowledge that no one else has that's very alluring to people, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's true. I am definitely somebody who likes having information. Like, I like knowing secrets. I don't do anything with them. I just like having knowledge, man. So I would definitely work side by side with an alien. Hey, Dolce Base, I don't know if you guys need any depressed artists, but I got you if you need me.
He looks like Post Malone.
Not anymore. Post Malone shaved his head and he's bald.
I told you I would shave your head if you wanted
to. No, I don't want to do that.
We can make you a head tattoo on the side of your head like he did.
No, I don't want that.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. Post Malone better hope that his little 5 minutes of fame lasts long. Or that he's invested his money. Because if he were to ever lose all of it and need to go get a job, there's no way.
Yeah, well, I feel like he has been around a lot longer than some of the idiots, like the SoundCloud rappers and shit. I feel like Post Malone's going to do pretty well. Because, I mean, he's already had a couple albums come out. He's been really big in the music scene. He's getting royalties from being on the Spider-Man soundtrack. He's doing pretty good, man. He's moving and grooving.
Yes, let's talk about Post Malone. Now, there's a guy who looks like a human alien, a hybrid.
Fair point.
Okay, well, that's the Dolce base in a nutshell.
That's really interesting. There is so much to unpack there. Right. Like human-alien war, cattle mutilation, human and aliens in working side by side.
Dogs and cats living together.
It's anarchy.
It is.
Wild. That's super cool. I'm really glad that you brought that. I think there's a lot to think about there. I like that one.
Okay. That's the Dolce base.
All right, so I am going to talk about my topic.
I'm excited about your topic. I'm so excited about your topic, Dylan, that I can't contain myself.
I know. You're very excited. I'm very excited too. So let's just crack right into this, all right? Let me set the scene for you.
In a world where dogs and cats.
All right. In a world where Jake will shut up and let me get to my topic.
Go ahead. Okay. I don't have to edit this one so I can be a dick.
Yeah, fuck you. Okay. Let me set the scene for you. Enter Clendenin, West Virginia. Graveyard. A cool 1966 night. A lone gravedigger working the graveyard looks up from his labors and sees quickly moving from tree to tree above him what can only be described as a large, dark, winged humanoid, the creature known as the Mothman.
Okay, time out. Why is he working in a graveyard at night?
Because he's a gravedigger. He's got to dig the graves. He's got a morning funeral.
Graveyard shift?
Yes.
Oh my God. Only white people would be in the middle of a graveyard at night. What is wrong with you?
If the money was right, I would definitely do it. What are you talking about?
I know I always sound like the chicken, but there's not enough money in the world to make me work in a graveyard at nighttime by myself.
$80 an hour.
Do I have a work friend?
You're okay.
If we're doing it together and it's $80 an hour,
okay.
I'll fuck with that.
Hell yeah. Oh, yeah, I would definitely do that. Are you kidding
me? If there's a job like that, I will quit my daytime job and just do that.
Hey, listeners, please help.
6 days a week, all holidays and weekends, I'm there.
Oh, yeah.
If I have my days, if I have to be there at 11 o'clock at night, oh, yeah, I'll do that.
Are you kidding me?
Fuck it up, son.
Hell yes, absolutely.
Oh, I'm so excited. Okay, keep going. All right, enter the Mothman. I like that.
Enter the Mothman.
Okay.
That was the first... I'm going to do that without snapping. I don't know why I snapped.
I don't know.
I'm just excited. I love the Mothman, man. That was the first recorded sighting of the superstar we know and love today as the Mothman of Point Pleasant. But of course, things did not stop at that one sighting. Just a mere 3 days after that fateful November night, there was another report of the Mothman. This one is one of the more famous ones. This was spotted by a group of people. It was two couples that were in a car driving home. And what they had seen, they ended up talking to not only the law enforcement, but they spoke with the local newspaper. They said that they saw it standing in the road in front of them. It stood about 6 or 7 feet tall with large gray wings, each spanning around 10 feet long, with glowing red eyes. And they also reported that it flew in front of them and followed the car at incredible speeds, up to 100 miles an hour. But it did not walk very fast. It only started gaining speed once it got into the air.
That's still super fucking creepy.
It's still really creepy, right? But the thing about this one is, it was this group of people, they saw this, they tried to get away from it, and it started chasing them, and then it was just gone. So they thought that, you know, maybe something was weird, they had just misseen something. So they ended up revisiting that area where they found, you know, where they initially saw the Mothman, and looked around, and they saw evidence of, like, some tracks, and I think one of them may have caught a glimpse of it again, and they were like, okay, we've figured it out. This was for real. We didn't all just make it up. And then they immediately went to the police and they told the police and brought the police there. And the police found some weird shit, like weird. It almost looked like hoof like tracks in the ground. Mm-hmm. And then evidence of something going up through the trees.
That is just frightening.
Yeah. It's, I mean, the whole idea of, you know, seeing this thing, you know, jump up and then, you know, follow you at like 100 miles an hour is weird enough, but then to go back and be able to see, like, oh, here's evidence that there was actually a thing there.
Why wouldn't they go back and take plaster casts of the footprints like you would if you were trying to research Sasquatch?
I don't know. I guess because it just looked kind of boring, you know? The Mothman's not particularly well known for his feet. I don't know. Don't ask me. Ask the fucking cops of 1966.
They're like, he's got really big red eyes, and Mothman feels really bad. He's like, I also have really nice feet. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever talks about my feet.
Well, I'm sure there's definitely some people out there that talk about Mothman's feet, but that's not the portion of the internet that I want to get into right now.
Is it Rule 34 on Reddit?
What?
Is it Rule 34? If it exists, God. There's porn of it?
Yes.
Let's find out if there's Mothman porn.
Oh, you know there is.
Oh, gross. I don't want to know.
You say that, but I'm going to leave. That's going to be the first thing you fucking look
up. No, it's not.
You're not even going to wait till I leave. So anyway, so one of the witnesses in that car, Linda Scarberry, was so shaken by this that she was actually treated for shock.
I'm right there with Linda Scarberry.
Yeah. But as the story goes, unfortunately for poor Linda, it did not stop just at Shock.
No, it didn't.
She got intimidating visits from the men in black.
I know.
Yep. She also got a lot of mysterious phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
Probably also from them.
Yes.
She ended up also seeing a lot of ghost-like activity. Items moving around her house, doors opening and closing.
Which I've seen in real life.
Yeah, I mean, we all have.
Things dropped on the ground that were just fine.
Exactly. And she also heard voices from nowhere, just kind of like in her head or near her or in other areas of the room.
No. I'm not into that.
Yeah.
And the reason that I say that, if you're listening and you don't know anything, you need to go back and listen to my origin episode. I grew up in a haunted house next to a desecrated and haunted church. And so I come into this podcast from a life where I've experienced a lot of paranormal events in my home while I was a child at a very formative age. And so when I hear things like that, I absolutely believe them because I have experienced them firsthand.
Yeah, and you come at it with a cautionary view, whereas...
Oh, absolutely.
Whereas with me, I've experienced some of that stuff,
and but not so, and as you're so much stupid curious.
I know, I and you really want it am.
Again, and I'm like, no, I would be all right if I went the rest of my life without never seeing a shadow person ever again.
Are you kidding
me? If I live to be 150 years old and never experience sleep paralysis again, I'll be all right with that. I don't want that again.
Sleep paralysis is terrible. I acknowledge that one, but I would love to see a shadow figure. Are you fucking kidding me?
Don't say that out loud.
Hey, oh universe.
It's 10:30 at night and you're saying
that. Hey, universe. I'm going home after this. Go ahead. Throw one my way.
Go ahead. Invite it in. Go ahead and invite it in and see what happens.
And if something happens, I will text you. And then you can make fun of me on the next podcast.
Yeah, I'll let you know. I will let everybody know that I told you so.
Mm-hmm.
Talk more about the men in black. Do you know about those men in black that they saw?
So those particular men in black, I mean, obviously don't know, you know, it's not like that was John Smith and
his
partner. But no, I mean, just the general idea. Have we not talked about men in black on
this podcast? We've not talked about men in black yet, but I'm going to tell the part that I know about these men in black.
Go for it.
Because, of course, everybody knows about Mothman.
Yeah.
The men in black that they saw were almost alien in nature. They were kind of like, their bodies were a little bit elongated and their eyes looked a little bit strange. They were always wearing sunglasses and they kind of spoke in a strange, not human kind of way. And they were very intimidating, physically intimidating
to people
that they investigated. Mm-hmm. Like they were human, but a little bit off.
It got into that like uncanny valley area where it's like, yeah, it's human in theory.
Right? They're human-ish.
Yeah.
They're humanoids, but I'm not quite sure. Plus, they kind of hold a supernatural sway over people, where you see people that have experienced the men in black. They try to recount the story. There's parts of it that they can't explain as to why it was weird. They're kind of at a loss.
Yeah.
Almost like they've been given screen memory of the entire experience.
It's just some sort of weird, like, cosmic horror about them, because like you have this sense of terror or this sense of something being off, but you can't comprehend what it is.
You kind of sense it, but you don't know why. Maybe it's an old instinctual predator response that we don't really use anymore because we're human beings and we don't think that there are any predators out there in the world that are going to get to us, but there are. But these guys are so humanoid that you would think they would be friendly and there's nothing to be afraid of, but at the same time, some people feel that sense of dread when they experience moments with the men in black.
Yeah, there's some sort of like primordial fear that's just embedded in you when you know that, like, I guess the same way that like you would look at a large animal that could kill you, even, you know, like if you're at a zoo and you see like a real big tiger or a lion, you're like, it's in a cage, it's not going to kill me. But there's always that little bit in your brain that's like, yeah, but it could kill me.
Yeah, there's an instinctual response to another predator like that, especially if you don't actually see it. And then you kind of, like if it's completely camouflaged, but you know something's there and you can kind of feel that sense of dread.
Like the predator.
Yeah, and then you actually see it. You know, once you lock eyes with it, you realize, oh my God, there's an instinctual sense of dread.
Exactly. Like that, just kind of that eyes in the back of your head sense, you know?
Exactly.
But anyway, so I won't get too into you know, the idea of the Men in Black, just because now I know we can cover that on a topic sometime. But if you are curious, I would definitely urge you to do a little bit of research on them. And by research, I do not mean watch the Will Smith movie, even though it is good. But basically, the Men in Black are supposedly either an alien force or a government agency that come in and alter memories of, you know, events. Paranormal activity, of certain mysterious events, things like that. And this poor woman, Linda Scarberry, got visits and phone calls from them. Anyway, moving on, only a few days after the initial reports, the Gettysburg Times, which is one of the local newspapers, reported 8 other cases of Mothman sightings throughout the area over the span of, you know, a couple days. Some of the reports came from people like firefighters who had reported an enormous bird-like creature with glowing red eyes. And there was one particular man who was at home, and he said his television started fading in and out with static and then showing mysterious symbols when he looked out his window and saw a large humanoid creature with bright red eyes like bicycle reflectors looking back at him that caught the light.
It's fucking crazy and scary.
That is so, like, just your TV unexpectedly going into static and then showing weird symbols, and then you look out your window and there's just some big bright-eyed dude chilling, looking in at you.
No, thank you. That's why all the windows in my house are closed right now.
As they should be.
As they should be. Are you going to talk about that, what was it called, like the munition site? Are you going to talk about that?
Mm-mm.
Okay, hold on. I'll get there. Munition site. Keep going.
Okay, so of these, you know, mysterious cases, there were some witnesses of Mothman who, in the same way that Linda Scarberry had weird experiences, some of the people that encountered Mothman had some severe impacts on their psyche. One particular case was a woman named Marcella Bennett. She and her family encountered the Mothman when they were out, I believe in the forest one day. She described him as looking like a large man with his head and neck down in the chest.
Mm-hmm. Like no neck.
Exactly.
That's how they always portray him.
Yeah, it's just kind of like the shoulders go up into a mound on the head.
Like that guy in 90 Day Fiancé who doesn't have a neck.
What is it, like
he's Big Mothman
Ed or some shit?
Some guy, I don't know his name.
God, I don't like looking at that guy. But anyway, she described him as a, you know, like I said, the large man with the head and the neck down into the chest. As if he was just kind of casually standing there waiting for her to arrive. After the encounter, though, she ended up suffering from horrible nightmares, anxiety, and paranoia, and this constant feeling like the Mothman was always, or like the Mothman was always with her or always watching her. Mm-hmm. Again, with that predatory, like, eyes in the back of your head feeling.
The instinctual.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Something's hunting me feeling.
Yes.
In this area of West Virginia, they used to have a World War II munitions plant called the TNT area. And yeah. That's where they got a lot of the Mothman sightings.
Yeah, I know a little bit of that one, but I actually did not include that one in my notes. But if you want to talk a little bit about that, go hog wild.
Oh, yeah. The TNT area was where they first saw it, because that first group of couples were going out there, obviously, to make out, or maybe they were going to go out there to smoke weed. I don't know what they were going to do, but that's where they found them. And also, someone else who looked at it, who also saw the Mothman. One of the other theories that they had was that the Mothman was actually just a large heron, which is a giant-ass bird out there.
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, and I've got a little bit of information about, like, some of the different theories behind the Mothman. Mm-hmm.
There was also... That. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
There was also a family where they came home and the Mothman chased them into their home and for like 2 hours was outside the home trying to get in and making noise and coming to the windows and stuff like that. And they were just inside the house freaked out.
Yeah. And it's really creepy because a lot of people describe the Mothman's, sounds as like a weird high-pitched screeching or clicking, like a high-pitched clicking. Some people say it even sounds like the pitch of like a mouse or something.
Mm, no, thank you.
Yeah. Which is, I think, creepier than like a deep low growl. Like, I don't like the high pitched shit, man.
Mm-mm. Either way, it's creepy.
Oh yeah, no, horrifying anyway. But something else that's pretty neat about this is during the sightings of the Mothman, there were a number of other bizarre, potentially paranormal occurrences that were happening, such as electronics and cars being affected in weird ways or even completely shutting off. He said that man that was sitting in his home, his TV started freaking out. But in much the same way that, like, alien encounters come by and affect electronics and shit, a lot of that will happen with the Mothman, too. There were also a larger number of UFO sightings during Mothman sightings as well. And then some of the more paranormal occurrences, like objects moving around in people's houses, doors and windows opening and closing on their own, and things like that. And there are actually a number of theories about what exactly the Mothman is. You know, obviously when you have things like these UFO sightings and the electronics being affected in bizarre ways, there are a lot of people that think that Mothman may actually be some kind of alien or ultra-terrestrial, as we've talked about.
Oh, yeah, the ultra-terrestrials.
Hell yeah.
I like that term.
I do, too. I made sure to put that one in here.
Awesome. Good. We should use that more often.
Absolutely. Some people say that they think it's just a, you know, mysterious bird species, or some sort of mutated bird, which, whatever, go fuck yourself. He's not a bird.
It's not a bird.
It's not a bird.
It's not a fucking bird.
Jesus. But one of the commonly agreed to things is whether or not, you know, you agree on the origin or the species of the Mothman.
The origin of the species.
I said origin or the species.
I know.
But Mothman is very closely associated to disasters. Some people believe he may be a cause of disaster, and others think he may simply be a messenger or a harbinger.
That's right.
Yeah.
Something that's interesting, and I'm about to go off on a tangent for a second, but Alex told me about a podcast that just deals with Bigfoot and Sasquatch, and I was listening to it, and they were talking about how within the Bigfoot community, there is a tendency to retell the stories and take out the supernatural elements of Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we have that same problem here with Mothman, where people have decided Mothman is a cryptid and there's nothing supernatural about him.
Yeah. But
at the same time, there are a lot of supernatural elements to the sightings of Mothman that we need to realize that are very closely related and linked. And if we ignore one, we can't ignore the other.
Exactly. And I mean, there are some people that have been really bizarrely affected. I mean, like I said, with the, you know, things moving around in the houses or the hearing voices, there were some cases about people even seeing premonitions, or glimpses into the future or glimpses into other places. Which I think is really, really weird. I couldn't get a whole lot of information about that, so I was only going to briefly mention it. But, I mean, it is definitely something that is fascinating to me and really weird when you, you know, think about something like, you know, the Loch Ness Monster. You know, you think, ah, it's just this creature floating around in the lake. All right, cool. But, you know, you have something like Mothman that actually, like, actively interacts with individuals and affects them and alters their mind in really, really weird ways and alters the world around it, you know, in ways that may be associated with things like aliens or extra dimensional beings or whatever you want to call them, and the ultra terrestrial. But I think there's so much cool shit, and it is such a shame to ignore supernatural elements of it.
Mm-hmm. You're going to talk about the Silver Bridge now?
I'm going to talk about the Silver Bridge
now. Awesome. Good.
Hell yeah.
What should be noted is that Mothman sightings started in November of 1966 and culminated in a December 1967 disaster, which Dylan will talk about now.
Yes. So this is also the start of where people started to believe that he may be associated with disasters. And of course, it picked up from there. So this idea originally stems from the tragedy of 1967, which was over a year since the first Mothman sighting. So on December 15th, the Silver Bridge suffered a horrible collapse with bumper-to-bumper traffic going basically the entirety of the bridge. This ended up killing 46 individuals, dropping 36 cars into the river, and I think injuring 9 other people.
That's right. So the Silver Bridge connects Point Pleasant, West Virginia, with Gallipolis, Ohio.
Yes. Parts of the supports in the bridge started giving way, and unfortunately with that bridge, it was designed in a time when cars were a lot less heavy. There was no, as you know, I looked at some of the reports and they said there was no real redundancy to it, which is actually something you really want in a bridge, because that way if one piece fails, you have other things that are doing the same job that help keep it in place.
Right, the fail-safe.
Exactly, the fail-safe. Whereas in this one piece went and it caused such a horrible weight shift that everything else went, and it just completely crushed this bridge.
One shot and the whole system goes down.
Exactly.
That's from Rogue One.
Yeah. I know. Rogue One was really good.
It was. Stop.
We're not getting on the movies.
There we go again. This is why we have two podcasts.
Yep. So the thing about the Silver Bridge is, in addition to it just being a horrible, horrible tragedy, a lot of photograph evidence, video evidence, and eyewitness reports state that people saw the Mothman flying near the bridge, and some people even caught him standing on top of the bridge or like hanging off the side. It's kind of in a weird like corner position. But this was shortly before the collapse. There were a number of Mothman sightings on top of the bridge, and then it collapsed and killed, you know, like I said, 46 individuals dead. So that was, like I said, that was the first time that Mothman had been associated with, you know, the disasters. But the thing that's really fascinating is that Mothman's reach is not exclusive to the Point Pleasant or West Virginia area. A number of other sightings of Mothman were reported at various other horrible disasters across the world, not even just the U.S. Shortly before disaster struck, he was seen flying over the Chernobyl reactor before it melted down.
In Ukraine?
Mm-hmm. He was seen near the, basically like the epicenter of the swine flu outbreak. He was seen on and near the I-35 bridge in Minnesota shortly before the collapse of that one. And he was seen in 2011 near the Fukushima nuclear reactor. Yeah, they saw him on the nuclear reactor, like on one of the big pillars and flying near it. There were a number of sightings of a large bird-like, man-like creature.
Oh my God.
Or humanoid man-like. Or humanoid bird-like creature. I didn't know
that. You just blew my mind.
Yeah. That one was really, really weird to me. And that's, I mean, that's just a few of them. That he's been seen at a couple other locations and a couple other disasters. I think one of the most recent famous ones that I heard about was actually just from 2017. He was seen flying around Chicago. Don't really know why. I don't know if that one was associated with a disaster, but they got over 50 reports of people seeing this Mothman-like creature flying around Chicago. Like I said, there are some people that think that he may be the cause of certain disasters, and there are some people that think that he may just be a harbinger. Personally, I think he's more along the lines of the messenger, you know, the harbinger type, and I found a case that actually really strongly supports that idea, which was, in Freiburg, Germany, a group of miners saw a large headless winged creature with glowing red eyes standing at the entrance of one of their particular mines. Obviously, this caused the miners to end up evacuating and trying to get everybody clear, which ended up saving all of their lives, as less than an hour later, that mine collapsed. Like, everything inside of it was just gone. But because they saw that creature there standing at the entrance, everybody moved away and their lives were saved.
Right. So he doesn't cause the disasters, but he just foreshadows the disasters.
Mm-hmm. Or he's drawn to areas where you can tell a disaster is going to happen, like a moth to a flame.
Oh my God. You did it again.
I did it again. Look at me go.
That's a good one.
Thank you. I actually didn't even have that one planned out. That was just off the dome. Congratulations, Dylan,
you got me. That's a good one.
Thank you very, very much. Now, there is...
I hate you because you thought of that before I could.
No, I'm so proud of that. But there is something else that I really, really want to talk about because of how much it just warms my heart and I want to be a part of it. I'm going to talk about Point Pleasant's Mothman Festival.
There you go.
That happens every September, probably not this year for obvious reasons.
Yeah, too much fucking COVID. Go ahead. Yeah,
but Point Pleasant has kind of basically taken the Mothman as like a mascot of the town, which I think is fucking awesome. But every year in September, I believe it's September 18th through the 20th, or somewhere around like the 20th, they have a Mothman Festival. So a number of vendors, you know, street vendors and people set up. They have specialty food that you can get. Basically, just it's a huge, huge tourist attraction where everybody who sells anything Mothman related can come together and just make this big, huge mess out of it. And it's super cool.
We should go there.
Oh, yeah. That is one of my, like, top things that I want to do. I love the Mothman. Mothman is probably my favorite cryptid, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm. Ultra terrestrial.
Mothman is one of my favorite ultra terrestrials. I just really, really love him. So I absolutely want to do the Mothman Festival. You can also find a lot of these kinds of things sold just on a day-to-day basis. I mean, mm-hmm. Point Pleasant gets a lot of traffic for Mothman anyway. And I was watching the BuzzFeed Unsolved about this, which I didn't know that they had until after I was pretty much done with my notes. so that was pretty fun. But they actually went through a couple different, you know, stores, and they like just filmed themselves going to these places or like restaurants and stuff. And some of the things that they showed were stores that sold like, there were stores entirely dedicated to Mothman where, like, you can buy hats, t-shirts, mugs, collectibles, pretty much anything you can think of. I saw your eyes light up the same way that mine did.
Let's go to West Virginia. It's not that far away.
I know. I would absolutely do it. I'll do it right now. Well, not right now, but I would do it right now.
Not right now, right now.
There are also restaurants that you can go to. There is a coffee house where you can buy Mothman cookies. You can buy Mothman-themed coffee. And one of the cooler things that I saw, which I wouldn't try this one because it has too many ingredients that I know I don't like, unfortunately, but there is a pizza place where you can order a Mothman pizza, and they make the pizza and they put the toppings in the shape of Mothman. So it's got like pepper legs, mushroom wings, pepperoni body, and then red cherry tomatoes as the eyes. And sounds it's
like a damn good pizza. Can we add spinach, please?
I mean, you can probably find a way to do it. Can
we please add spinach and goat cheese?
You can probably do that. But it looks, it's really cool. It looks really cool. But it's so neat to see this entire town, you know,
embracing it.
Just embracing it. So much so that they have a Mothman statue directly in the center of town. It is a full metal statue, life size, if not bigger, of just this big moth dude with the bright red, like ruby red eyes. It's so cool. I fucking love Mothman, and I love Point Pleasant in theory. I would love to go to Point Pleasant and confirm my love for it. But that was some information on the Mothman. Another thing I really like about the Mothman is just how much information there is and how many cases there are. There's so much that I could talk about here.
It's very well documented.
It's very, very, very well documented. I behoove the listener to go look more into Mothman if this is something that interests you. I think it's really, really cool. And if we have any generous people, maybe send us money to go to Point Pleasant to a Mothman festival.
You want to go with us and we'll take you with us. We'll figure it out. We'll plan something for next year.
Hell yeah, absolutely. I would definitely do that. That was mostly a joke. But I mean, if some people actually want to go to Point Pleasant with us for a Mothman festival, hit me up, y'all. I was really into that. Anyway, that was the Mothman.
Excellent. You did not disappoint.
Thank you very much. I am so glad that I was able to bring that for season two, because I really thought about it a lot during season one, but it didn't feel right, and this time it felt right.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's another episode. Thank you so much for listening. Remember that we are on Facebook and we are on Instagram. Send us direct messages. Mostly Instagram is where we're at right now.
Yeah.
If you've got any kind of topic suggestions or questions that you have, questions about us, anything like that, just let us know.
Yeah, you can DM us, message us on Facebook,
leave a comment on any of our posts.
Yeah, comment. Recommend a friend if you think that, you know, some of your friends would dig us.
Yeah, that would be awesome. All right. Well, from Dylan, my co-host, my name is Jake, and we hope we have left you too scared to sleep. It's not bad.
Yeah. No, you've definitely done worse.
I've done worse things. Okay.
All right. So Point for Pleasant. My topic.
Point Pleasant.
Stop. Stop talking. God.
The Silver Bridge?
I'm going to have to edit all of your bullshit out.
Wasn't just it called the battery?
Just let me get to my topic. Are you done?